scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, the left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla's rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, happy Friday. Let's get the last hour of the week on Flames Talk underway. It is a Friday, May 23rd. Steinberg along with you as we welcome you to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit Calgary Lock and Safe. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. It's Friday, which means it's time for the Eric Francis Hour. Sportsnet's Eric Francis joins us right now. Hello, EF.
How are you, my friend?
I'm good. I missed you last week. It was very sad.
Did you have a nice holiday?
Yeah, it was nice. Just a little. It was pretty chill. Nothing exotic. Just a good little family holiday. So it was good. How was your week?
Good for you. Yeah, no, it's good. Yeah, like life's good. Just golfing and getting ready to go to Edmonton for games 3 and 4.
Going to Edmonton.
Yeah, for work. So, yeah, doing that and life's good. Just had a blast today. I don't know if we'll talk about it later, but had a blast today at the Gordie Howe Cares luncheon, which I emceed, which was just a blast. Like, they raised so much money and do such good work. And
yeah.
There were some Hall of Famers there and had... Heard some really interesting insights from Mike Keenan and Jeremy Roenick, like involving the Flames that maybe we should get into a little later, but really, really enjoyed my day with those guys.
We will definitely do that a little bit later on in the hour. It's interesting. So here we are on May 23rd. Like, it's hard to believe, but it's true. It's been more than a month since the Flames last played a game. It's been more than a month since locker cleanout day. Like, We're well into the off season now, and yet still finding things to talk about with this Flames group. But yeah, it's been more than a month since they played their last game, and here we are. I guess it makes sense as we're well into the Western and Eastern Conference Finals. But I guess that was that took me a little bit aback when I clued in on that. Good Sherlock Holmes detective work by me earlier today.
We're probably closer to free agency signings in the draft than we are the end of the season. Like, we're getting closer to getting some answers as opposed to starting to ask the questions. So I you know, and not that anything's changed in terms of giving us hints on what's coming. We all have our guesses, but you know, and I guess what happened in Toronto over the last couple of days is really kind of started a lot of interesting conversation about, you know, more free agents and Mitch Marner and these other guys and Tavares and even Brad Marchand. Like, so many different things over the last couple of days have kind of become a little clearer in terms of who might be available.
Mm-hmm.
But still lots of questions for sure.
What does the rest of this offseason look like, Eric? I mean, we've got a draft coming up in about a month's time, so the Flames will have their two first-round picks. We know that they came close to winning a lottery but did not win the lottery, so they will have New Jersey and Florida's picks. We know that their pick will transfer to Montreal as it does not finish in the top 10. We know there's a decision to be made on Rasmus Anderson, and maybe that decision does end up getting made this summer. Maybe it doesn't. But, like, what's on your... I don't know, power rankings of what you're anticipating as we move deeper into this offseason?
I think the Rasmus Anderson situation is kind of first in terms of power rankings. I think once you have a clearer picture of where that is or isn't going, then you could start to, that's kind of the first domino to fall because, you know, as we've talked about on this program, I do believe he will be traded before the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that it'll be very clear very quickly in their conversation that the player is not willing, you know, anywhere close to being willing to sign right now for the money that the Flames might be willing to offer. I think, you know, he'd be wise to wait another year, wait till his stock goes up, and then, you know, think about signing something. And if you're not going to sign anything now, then the Flames are probably looking to move on from him and cash in on a very, very attractive asset, especially given his price tag. So I think that's the first domino that will fall. And then after that, obviously, you know, in terms of free agents, you know, everybody wants to know who the Calgary Flames might be targeting. And like, to me, the two most attractive UFAs out there that the Calgary Flames, I think, will make a big pitch on are guys in-house. I think Dan Vladar and Justin Kirkland. I really do. And I think Sam Bennett is a guy who they're interested in. Mm-hmm. But I also think that only to a certain point they'd be interested in, given his advanced age. I'm not sure how interested Sam Bennett would be in coming back here. There's going to be no shortage of people who want a Sam Bennett. So I think the Calgary Flames will be extremely quiet in the unrestricted free agent market. And I think that that's the way they should be. I think that the core of this team is already with this team. I think they're going to add to that via the draft and via a trade with Rasmus Anderson this summer. And I think that those are the guys you want to give as much ice time to as possible. So I really don't believe that you should be adding more than one or two bodies outside of the current organization right now. And some people might say, wait a sec, they didn't make the playoffs. Why wouldn't you want significant change? And I would answer by just saying, because this is part of a process. Mm-hmm. And I think the process only began this year. And I think the building blocks for this franchise moving forward, in large part, are already in place. And I think that you want to leave spots for a lot of your youngsters to kind of step in and be the next Klapka, be the next Pospisil,
Zeri.
Be the next Zeri.
Yep.
You know? And so to me, I think it would be disappointing to hear of any significant free agent signings outside of, like I said, Kirkland or Vladar. I really think it would be disappointing. And I think it would in some way suggest that they've veered a little bit off course. And so I don't anticipate them doing that. That's my point. That, you know, Craig Conroy has done very well to stay with the script, stay with the plan, and I don't see him straying from that this summer, especially given that any of the guys out there that they could probably go out and overpay for and outpay everybody else because the Flames have so much money would be beyond the age limits that this franchise has kind of set up as their appropriate age markers. So I just don't think it makes sense to sign any of these guys who are out there on the unrestricted free agent market.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that the Bennett would be the one guy. I think had Rantanen not signed long-term in Dallas.
Sure.
I think Rantanen would have been a guy they would have put a ton of money on the table for, but Rantanen signed in Dallas. And we'll see. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm still not convinced Bennett's going to get to unrestricted free agency.
Me neither.
But if Florida wins another Stanley Cup, they say, hey, two cups, and we got to reload. We got to keep our cap structure. We can't afford to overpay a 28, 29-year-old Bennett. It's not out of the question. I still think Florida keeps Bennett in the fold somehow, but we'll see. He's the one guy I think the Flames will make a pitch for, but you know, I think his former GM, Brad Treliving, is going to make a pitch for him in Toronto. I think numerous other teams are going to make pitches for him. So I'm not saying that I think it's a good chance Bennett's going to come here. I just think the Flames will make a pitch for him if he makes it to unrestricted free agency. And we know how much they need to solve their center ice issues. And that's, I guess, the only caveat that I would add to what you had to say, because I am fully with you on, like, I don't think so. Last year on July 1st, they signed Lomberg, who we all rave reviews, and rightfully so. They signed Lomberg, they signed Cooley, they signed Mantha, and they signed Bean. I don't think we're seeing those types of signings this year, or if we are, I don't think we're seeing multiple of them, because I think it's very, very clear that the Flames want to have numerous young players actually have a chance at those spots and not have, you know, a Tyson Barry, another example, like not have guys that are, you know, kind of blocking the way. And I get why they did it last year, because there were guys that you're like, yeah, maybe, but they weren't like truly pounding on the door. Whereas now I think whether it's a Brustevich or a Sam Morton or a Suniev, obviously we have the conversation about Parekh, Kuznetsov and some other names, but I think with where the Flames are right now, signing a bunch of 1 and 2 year deals to guys that can step in and play a role, I don't think it makes a ton of sense. So I'm completely with you on that front. And I think they want their young guys to actually have the opportunity to have some open spots for them at training camp. The only caveat I would have is making a trade for a center. If they can find a way, and that hasn't changed since Craig Conroy's taken over, and that still hasn't changed even with the Morgan Frost trade in late January. They need desperately to find a guy who could potentially be this organization's number one center going forward. And that's why the Bennett conversation exists, even though he's not in the age range. But is there a center out there the Flames could target, acquire, and bring in that could, at the very least, maybe be this team's next number one or number one-ish center iceman?
Yeah. And I look, there's zero doubt in my mind that at least one of the two first-round draft picks the Calgary Flames have this year will be used on a center, if not both. And I'm not suggesting that that's, you know, clearly going to be your number one center in 3 or 4 years when he develops, but they have to eventually bite the bullet and they have to get off the whole adage that we're just drafting the best player available, which every team in the league claims that they do at the draft. Sometimes you have to go shopping for positions specifically, and this is one of those years. That first round draft pick that they have, 18th overall.
Yep, the jersey pick.
You know, you're still going to get, and I'm no draft expert, but from what I've seen from the lists and looking at it, you're still going to get some pretty highly touted young centers available at 18th overall. And so I would be stunned if they didn't grab a center with that 18th overall pick. Like really surprised. And I think, I think it might be wise to get one also when they pick 29th overall or whatever the Florida pick ends up being. I'm not as stuck on.
It'll be 29th at the best, right?
Yeah. Which is, Flames can't seem to get a break when it comes to those conditional trades. No. But anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, they'll address the center position in some fashion at the draft, no question about it, even if it's second and third rounders. Like, they have to walk away with at least a couple centers in the draft to get some in the pipeline, because we don't really have many. We don't see many as observers in the pipeline even right now. Look, Connor Zary to me is a fascinating piece in terms of starting next year. In my mind, you have to start him at center next year to see what he's all about and just to see where he slots in. And that's the guy who I would automatically turn into a center moving forward. He was a center.
Who do you bump then?
Well, this is the question, and you're right. Like, it's such a fascinating debate because you're right. You've got Backlund, you've got Kadri,
and you've got Frost, right?
Frost, who you're going to invest in as an RFA soon.
Maybe.
Probably. I don't think you trade for him. And
no, I don't think so either. I just don't know what that investment looks
like. It'll be a bridge deal. Yeah, I think we all think it's going to be a bridge deal to kind of a wait and see for both sides. Either way, you're right. Like, it's not cut and dry. And you don't want Connor Zary as your fourth line center. I think in preseason, zero doubt in my mind, you start him as a center.
Agreed.
However he slots in, it doesn't matter. You got to see what you've got there because, you know, moving forward, if he ended up bumping Morgan Frost, nobody would be upset about it in the organization, no matter how much you invest in Morgan Frost. So, because I think that if anybody in the organization, and you tell me if you think I'm wrong, in the organization right now, in terms of all their people, who is the one possibility that could be a number one center moving forward? You know, in the age appropriate, you know, window of say what, 22 to 27, mm-hmm. Like Zary's your best chance. And a lot of people out there say, no, his cap is probably 50 points. He's a second line center at best. And, you know, I'm not limiting him to that, but that's what I've heard people say in and around the organization. But you need to find that out. You can't just sit and wonder and assume that that's what his limit is. You have to give him every possibility to go out there and be a number one center. Like, Who, like, you tell me, who's even number two on that depth chart? Like, who's the second?
As, like, the second, like, on the power rankings of who could be the, like, who might be able to be that guy?
Yeah, as a center.
I honestly, like.
Yeah, right?
And I don't, the only guy I could point to would be Hanzek. I don't know if I see him as a center, though. And I don't even know if I see him. I still hold out hope because I think guys with his frame and raw skill set take a little bit longer. Like, if all of a sudden Sam Hanzek can turn into Sean Couturier down the road, well, then I think that could be a real nice pick for the Flames. But I feel like that's such a project type situation. As much as I'm a little bit more, I'm trying to think of the right word. I'm not as out on Hanzek as I see elsewhere on social media. And I know a lot of Flames fans are, but a guy who's been in the organization less than two full years and with the injuries he's sustained, I'm not quite ready to completely cut bait on Craig Conroy's first ever first round pick. I still have hope that at the very least he might be able to turn into something. And but he would be the only other guy in the organization right now with some sort of a ceiling that I could say, and I would put Zeri at one, and then it'd be a pretty big gap between Zeri and Hanzek. There's not a lot of internal candidates would be the main point.
Yeah, exactly. So we could rank them any way we want, but it needs to be addressed. And so going back to the original point that you raised, you know, if they did go out and via trade address that situation, like, if you're going to go out there and make a significant trade, and I would argue that trading Rasmus Anderson, you know, constitutes a significant trade, you know, maybe that's where you could maybe go out and address this to some degree. I'm not suggesting you're going to get a number one center, but I'm suggesting that potentially you could get a guy that may evolve into someone who can challenge to be a number one center with Zeri or maybe with Hanzek or one of these draft picks they're going to get this year. So anyway, that's, it all starts with Anderson to me. And then after that, you know, I think that would help dictate what you may or may not do in free agency, but I still think it should be and will be quiet. Because don't forget, at the end of the day, I say this all the time, the biggest virtue that I think Craig Conroy has exhibited as the GM of this Flames team has been patience. And I know he doesn't want to keep waiting to try and address the center situation. So I think he, you know, that's his number one priority this summer. But if he doesn't get the deal he's looking for or the player he's looking for, he'll keep looking and he'll be patient. He's not going to try and force it. Like, I really believe that.
I do too. And nor should you. And I do think that that's a significant trade. I think that, and Logan and I had the conversation about this earlier this week. Like, you know, I know Rasmus is coming off a down year, but you move on from Rasmus Anderson, you trade him, and you're not getting better right away. Like, you're not bringing back a commensurate player who is averaging 24 minutes of ice time a night. As rough as Anderson's season was, he still is a top four defenseman who plays 23.59, number two on the team in ice time this year. Over the last three seasons combined, he's 17th overall in average time on ice at 23.58. He still plays big PK minutes. And off the ice, you know this as well as anybody, he's turned into like a legit leader in that room. He's as well respected and as much of a voice in that room as you're going to find. So you move on from that guy. I don't think you're getting better in the immediacy. Long term, you are. Long term, you're making a deal that's probably going to help you. Plus, you're not going to sign a deal that would end up being one that's not great for your organization, which is why you'd be trading him. But I do think that it's important to point out that Raz is still a pretty good player in this league.
He is a huge trade chip at a guy making under $5 million a year.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Who played top 4 minutes, well, top 2 minutes on this team. He's a massive trade chip, and nobody should suggest or get me wrong when I suggest that they should trade Rasmus Anderson for any other reason other than it's all about asset management. Like, I'm not in the school. There are people out there who think trade Rasmus Anderson because he was minus 38 and he's junk. No. I'm not saying trade Rasmus Anderson at all because he's junk. I'm saying trade Rasmus Anderson because I think he's a hell of a defenseman. he just got named captain of Team Sweden at the World Championships. Mm-hmm. And I know that it's not their World Cup squad or their Olympic squad, but that's a hell of a statement to give him the captaincy over Michael Backlund, who captained you to a World Championship a handful of years earlier. Like, that's significant to me. That speaks to his character. So I say trade him, because I don't think there's any appetite, or I don't think it's going to be a match in terms of when he wants to sign and what he wants to sign for, and the Calgary Flames' desires as they move forward with their timelines. So, ergo, the obvious move is to trade him. That's why I think it's like it's an absolute no-brainer, and I think it will happen. I've said this a million times. And they're going to get a significant return for him. This is not a fire sale. Mm-hmm. This is, okay, we're hanging our shingle out, and we're saying Rasmus Anderson, arguably our number one defenseman, certainly one of our top two defensemen, is up for grabs in the prime of his career. Who's interested? Well, guess what? At least half the league would be very, very, very interested in adding him either as a top two guy or as a depth piece on a really deep team. So don't ever mistake this trade for being a team that's trying to get out from a Rasmus Anderson contract. It's a team-friendly contract, and he's a hell of a player and a hell of an important part of the Calgary Flames right now, and nobody should ever forget that. And they will trade him as such, not because they think it's time just to get rid of Rasmus Anderson. Yeah.
That's not why they're moving him.
No.
They're moving him because they can't agree to a contract, or it doesn't make sense for them at this stage of their retool. I came up with this term a while back called the high build, the hybrid rebuild. I came up with that term myself.
Be hearing from my lawyer.
that's courtesy Eric Francis. But they like where they are in their build to where they want to be, signing Raz at 29, who will be 30 when the deal kicks into an 8-year extension, probably doesn't make a ton of sense. So if he's not willing to go 6 years and wants to see what he can get elsewhere, well then, even if he's not going to sign with the team you trade him to, he's got very limited trade protection. And I think any team in the league is going to be all over, even if he is your second pairing right side D, Raz at $4.5 million. He's one of the best value second pair D's in the NHL. And on some teams, he'll be your number one right side defenseman. Yep. So, I think there'll be plenty. Plus, the attitude, the snarl, the leadership, the tone setting, all those types of things that Raz brings to the table. I think that there is going to be a lineup of teams interested in him. It just goes down to which teams are willing to pay the price so that and I think the GM here, I don't want to say learned a lesson, but I think is going to take a lot of what happened, not this past season, but the season before, and take it into how he approaches this. Like, the Noah Hanifin situation sucked. And I know that Noah has been very, like, I didn't hold him hostage all that time, but he kind of did. And that's fine. That's well within his rights. But he and the agent kind of pulled more strings in where Hanifin was going to end up than the Flames were expecting, and it contributed to a pretty paltry return when it was all said and done. And it was a tough situation for the Flames. And so I think getting out in front of it and really starting serious conversations like now, even if you still are open to re-signing him, I think you have to be going down that road so you don't find yourself in the spot that they found themselves in a season ago, where it's like, oh, is Hanifin going to sign? He's close to signing. Actually, he's got cold feet. No, he's close to signing again, and he's not going to sign. Like, you don't want to put yourself in that situation either.
And it was the Flames at one point got cold feet as well, right?
Like, that's right. When was that? Like November or late October? We were coming back. We were driving back from the Heritage Classic, so late October is when that happened.
Yeah, they had lost a bunch in a row, and it was like, wait a sec, all bets are off. The organization needs to put a pause on everything, because instead we may need to completely rebuild here. And listen, I look at the Anderson situation in exactly the same way as I looked at the Jacob Markstrom situation right now. You don't have to trade him, but ultimately you will trade him to cash in on that asset. Why not trade him in while you still get, you know, top dollar? And in both cases, while both were very, very important members of your team, part of the leadership group, proven. You never had to worry about either one of them. You also needed to see what you had underneath them. And look at how well that worked out by opening up the door for Dustin Wolf. You know, we have a Calder Trophy finalist because of it. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty obvious in this organization that they now have, like, you know, one of the pillars of their franchise for the next 7, 8, 9 years. Who knows? In net, in the most important position. You wouldn't have found that out if you didn't trade Jacob Markstrom. Mm-hmm. Therefore, just like that situation, Rasmus Anderson will be playing minutes ahead of Hunter Brustavich, Zane Parekh. And these are guys who you really want to know when or if they're ready to play at the NHL level. It might be a little too soon to start either one of them, even at the beginning of the season. I don't know. I mean, I think we all agree Zane Parekh's starting the season here. There's no question. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, by getting rid of Anderson, not only do you cash in, get tremendous assets, get top dollar for him, you also open up the door for two of your most prized possessions, youngsters, and that's important too. So just like Markstrom, there are so many reasons why you pull the trigger on a deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
You rip the Band-Aid off, as it were. Like, you could let this linger, but, you know, the Markstrom thing happened pretty quickly in the offseason, and it was like, yeah, I get it. They needed to figure this out.
It's Steinberg and Francis along with you. The Eric Francis Hour is underway. Eric from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca joins us every Friday for a full hour here on Flames Talk, and that's exactly what he's doing right now. It's Flames Talk coming at you this hour from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis from Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca with us on this hour of Flames Talk. Why are you going to Edmonton on Saturday? What's gotten into you? What's happening here?
I heard there's so many great tourist attractions, great people.
There's that warehouse. There's that cement factory. There's the other cement factory.
Yeah, the other one, yeah.
Got the smokestacks.
Got to go up there and cover game 3 and 4. It'll be interesting. I mean, hey, those are two pretty evenly matched teams. Fascinating to see what happens, you know, Friday night, but also, you know, as we move forward. I covered the series last year, you know, traveling back and forth between Dallas and Edmonton and, you know, it was a fascinating series, and I still remember the overwhelming, what I left with was just how stunned the Stars were that they lost to the Oilers. They could not believe that they'd actually lost to them. And I think that's really going to stick in their craw. And I think maybe we saw a little bit of that in game one when they came back with, 5 goals in the third period.
Yep.
I think the memory of just how stinging it was to lose to those guys has been a bit of a motivator for them, but we'll find out. We'll see how it goes from here. I still think at the end of the day, I think goaltending will be the difference. And that's something that many people would have predicted, you know, for the Oilers at the beginning of the season. If you don't address that goaltending situation, that's probably going to be your undoing. And we'll see if that's the case. I don't know. Stuart Skinner is so hot and cold that that may be the difference.
The nominees or finalists for GM of the Year came out on Friday, and Jim Neal once again up for the award. And Jim Neal has been in that position since spring 2013. It's been more than 12 years since Jim Neal, who's just Alberta guy and just salt of the earth, one of my favorite humans in hockey. And he has been as aggressive as it comes when it comes to trying to build the Stars into a cup contender, from the Tyler Seguin trade to the Mikko Rantanen trade. Those are kind of the bookends, and in between, he's gone out and made significant deals and significant long-term signings. Like, this guy has been very aggressive in trying to get his team to win a Stanley Cup. They've been to one cup final in his tenure, and that was the weird restart year in the bubble in 2020. Otherwise, they haven't been able to get there. And they've got a 1-0 lead here on the Oilers, but you wonder, and Rantanen just signed, so they've got pretty good player under contract for a while here. But part of you wonders, like, okay, if it's not this year, when is the year that the Stars figure it out? And I'm not saying their window's closing, but, you know, at some point you want to see that team get over the hump so they don't turn into the next Nashville or the next San Jose, right?
Yeah, and I think this year, you know, hey, what is it? You know, who cares what I think? But, I care. I think they're going to move on to the final. And, you know, again, the deepest team in hockey, in my opinion. And, this is a team that could have been hamstrung by the Tyler Seguin deal. Don't forget, you know, Tyler Seguin signed a deal making $9.85 million a year and has spent, what, the last 3-4 years largely being injured during it, or just not being effective when he is in the lineup. But he's found a brilliant role on this team, and he's a great example of the careful blend between veterans and youth. And I love the mix that they've got. Hey, when you think of the Calgary Flames and what they are trying to accomplish, I think that the Dallas Stars are the perfect template for them. Look, every team's different, but in terms of trying to rebuild, retool on the fly, you know, these guys in Dallas had a couple phenomenal drafts in a row, and it turned their fortunes on a dime, and it's given them this blend of youth and veterans that I think is the reason why they're one of the most dangerous teams in hockey. And I think that the Calgary Flames are trying to do something similar, you know. And when I look at Seguin's contract and I kind of put it up against Huberto's, you know, no, they're not being paid the way that to do the things that you'd hope they were doing, but they found other ways to contribute. At least Huberto did this year as well. Anyway, I think it's a hell of a team. Robertson still needs a long-term deal. You know, there's a lot of question marks. Jamie Benn's probably going to sign a team-friendly deal next year. I love this team on paper. I think that they're just a phenomenal hockey team, and I give Jim Neal all the credit in the world.
And they still had to. And I keep going, but I think Dallas is a great example for what the Flames should be trying to do. Ottinger, Hintz, Robertson, all guys that were later on. I mean, Roope Hintz is a legit number one center, and he may not be McKinnon or McDavid, but, you know, talking about a guy that he's scored 30 in this league 3 times now. He's, I think, going to be in the Selke Trophy conversation. Like, Hintz is more of the Bergeron-Kopitar ilk compared to the McKinnon-McDavid ilk, but he's still a legit guy in this league, and they got him in the second round, and we know Robertson and we know Ottinger were not first-round guys either. But, I always go back, they did get Haskinen third overall, and there's still that high-end pick that Dallas is using. Now, granted, they got to the Western Conference Final without Haskinen playing, but they did draft Haskinen number 3 overall.
Yep. So that's different than the Flames, of course, but
and maybe otherwise, the Flames do end up getting a pick that high at some point.
Sure. Like, you know, we'll be talking lots in the fall about whether or not the Flames take a step backwards after this really, you know, successful season they had this year in terms of the steps, the growth they had. And I do think that's actually going to be one of the biggest question marks going into next season. Like, and I don't want to get into it now, but like they were successful this year based largely on the us versus the world mentality. Mm-hmm. It fueled them. Mm-hmm. But you can't use that next year because most people that cover the NHL next year are going to say Calgary Flames will make the playoffs or should make the playoffs. So you can't use that as a motivator anymore. And I just wonder what sort of effect that will have. It sure seems in Calgary like everything's moving in the right direction and in a positive momentum. But there's always that possibility there's a step back next year because what they did last year was based almost entirely on work ethic and buy-in. And if that falters...
And goaltending.
And goaltending, fair enough. Yeah, there were a lot of things that kind of came together for them. But anyway, I do think it's fascinating to look at Dallas and see the similarities between Calgary. Look, Calgary's missing some major ingredients that Dallas has, but Calgary's, through the draft, is going out to try and chase those guys.
But like, to your point, I mean, okay, Haskinen aside, it's not just Robertson, Hintz, and Ottinger. Harley, who's turned into, like, Thomas Harley was a Four Nations faceoff late addition because of injury. But because of how well he played there and how well he's played this season, he might have put himself on the Olympic team for next year.
Yeah.
So Thomas Harley was an 18th overall selection. Flames are selecting 18th overall. Wyatt Johnston was a 23rd overall selection. Wyatt Johnston has scored 32 and 33 goals the last two seasons. Logan Stankoven was a second-round pick. They used Stankoven as a key part of the Rantanen trade. So, I mean, they have been a very good drafting team, and that is what the Flames are trying to do. So I still think that the Dallas example is a really good one to keep falling back
on. Yeah, and, you know, to carry that further, like, Heiskanen was third overall, but Zane Parekh, ninth overall, and I know they're different style of players, but there's the potential for Zane Parekh to be that transformative defenseman that the Calgary Flames haven't had for a long time. Like, most teams don't have. It's early, and who knows, but that's the possibility that he could be, you know, not Heiskanen type, but you know what I'm saying, like that impactful player.
That type of
blue limer. Yeah. That high draft pick that pans out as a defensive anchor for an organization. I always think it's interesting. Look at the Calgary Flames, like two of their most important players this year, two of their, you know, guys who you would consider potential MVPs. Dustin Wolf was drafted, fourth last in the draft the year he went in the seventh round. And the other one is Mackenzie Weegar, who was also, I believe, a seventh rounder. And was he seventh?
Yes.
Yeah, I think he was seventh.
Yep. Seventh round pick to Florida. Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, these are guys that it almost makes you hungrier for those players. But it doesn't matter where you're drafted, it's where you go from there. And both of those took the opportunities and have been phenomenal NHLers. Well, anyway, it's early for Wolf, but pretty good start. And Weegar had a damn good season, too, this year as well.
Before we wrap up, my friend, you were part of an event earlier on this Friday, and you will be a part of an event continuing on this weekend. Tell us about your Friday, and tell us about what Saturday and Sunday will have in store.
Yeah, it's just the Gordie Howe Cares hockey tournament, and it's to raise money for those people who help patients with dementia. The reality is that most caregivers for people with dementia die before the patients do. And this is a very unique charity that raises money to try and help and educate those people who are nursing people or helping people through dementia, you know, husbands, wives, sons, daughters. And I just think it's very unique in that way. And this tournament, it's basically a bunch of beer league teams, you know, largely from the oil patch. They all get together. They all raise, God, some teams raise $150,000 all by themselves. And then you draft NHL players. Each team gets one former NHL player to play on their team. And I was just at a luncheon with Jeremy Roenick and Raymond Bork and Matthew Barnaby, Dave Babich. It's all over the map. Mike Keenan's there. But the luncheon today, I always emcee the luncheon, and we do a hot stove. Last year was phenomenal with Derek Sanderson, Ray Bourque, and Jerry Cheevers. This year it was Jeremy Roenick, who just got into the Hall of Fame, of course, Mark Recchi, and Iron Mike Keenan. And it was fantastic to watch these guys. It was fantastic just to be part of the hot stove. And one of the stories that I didn't know about was Jeremy Roenick saying that in 2006, 2007, he was 5 minutes away from signing with the Calgary Flames. Did you know that?
I did, and I knew that because when JR wrote his book,
it was in the book. That's where I saw it, yeah.
And I remember he came in and was doing like a book tour and sat down with Kerr and I in the old studio. Like, this was back in, like, I don't remember when it was, but it was before we were in the downtown studio. So back in the old Northeast dump. And I remember he came in, and Rob and I were so embarrassed that here's Jeremy Roenick coming in. And like, here's our broom closet that smells like a gym sock. You want to sit down and do an hour with us? But I remember he went in detail with how close he was to signing with the Flames that year.
Yeah, and he was talking to Daryl Sutter, and they were just about to sign the deal. They go way back to their days in Chicago together, and then all of a sudden, in the middle of the conversation, a phone call came in on Jeremy's cell phone. He looked down, and it just said 99. That's Wayne's. That's what it says when Wayne calls you.
Oh, did he wear 99?
Yeah. And or maybe he had his phone upside down. Did he wear 66? I can't remember. But he said, and Daryl says, okay, well, great talking to you. I guess we'll see you down the road, knowing full well that if Gretzky came and made a pitch, Daryl probably wasn't going to be able to compete against a chance to play for the greatest player of all time. So anyway, that and a million stories that they told today in the hot stove were just fascinating, including a story that JR has about playing poker on the plane with Keith Tkachuk back in the day in his Phoenix days. One of the hands that they were playing was the pot was $110,000 US. And they were playing guts. Do you know how to play guts?
I do know how to play guts. Little three card game.
Yeah, and you drop the coin.
And the pots in guts can get so high because you just keep on resetting. So that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. You got to double the pot when you lose. So it came down to him and Keith Tkachuk, who are still great friends, and it was $110,000. You can imagine the crowd around them at the back of the plane. And they both dropped coins saying that they're in for the hand, which meant somebody was going to have to pay like $220,000 if they lost. They both dropped their coins. And Keith, being the captain, I thought that's one of the great captain moves I've ever heard of. He looked at JR and he said, do you want to just split it? And JR said, yes. He couldn't say yes fast enough. And everyone else was pissed off because they're saying, hey, wait, that you can't do that. That's our money. And Captain said, look, first of all, most of the money in that pot is mine and JR's already.
Yeah.
Second of all, this is getting stupid. And third of all, we can do whatever the hell we want. So, but what was really cool about the story to me is that afterwards, of course, everybody wanted to know who would have won the hand. And sure enough, it was Tkachuk who had an incredible hand and he knew it, but he still took the high road and said, you know what, let's just split it. Everybody saves face and we can end this drama, because that could also cause some friction between teammates and
no doubt.
And other stuff like that. So anyway, I thought that was one of the many great stories. If people ever get a chance.
Did Keenan address pulling Mika Kiprusoff in game 7 against San Jose?
Didn't address that. funny.
JR was on the other side that night.
Isn't that funny? That's true. Anyway,
I'll never forgive Keenan for that one.
Most of my questions for Keenan, there was a little gathering after the luncheon, and I sat down with him, and I had so many questions about the 87 Canada Cup, because that was my 72 Summit Series. I was there for that game 3, and I just wanted to hear everything he could possibly tell me about that series. Nice. And man, he gave me some great stories on that. And then he also spoke very openly and frankly, and I won't get into the details, but he was the coach when Pelle Lindbergh, drove his Porsche into a wall and killed himself in the middle of a season. He was coming off a Vezina Trophy season. And, boy, as a coach in the NHL, especially a young coach, which he was, I'm not sure anything can prepare you for having to deal with something like that. And, we forget about how impactful that whole situation was. But anyway, if anyone has a chance to go to this Gordie Howe Carers luncheon, it sells out every year, 1,000 people. It's just so well attended and supported. Do yourself a favor and buy a ticket and get out there and see the hot stove, because every year they get some of the biggest names in hockey, and we have an absolute blast. And everything is off the record except for the stories I just told you.
Yeah, exactly. hey, I know I won't be in the vehicle with you, but please travel safe to Edmonton.
Thank you, my friend. Yeah, I miss our trips to Edmonton together. We will. I'll take photos of all the top.
Yeah, if you could do a smokestack 1, smokestack 2.
Yeah, I'll label them. Yeah, yeah.
Cement factory 3. That would be good.
I'll let you know which industrial park they're in. Yeah.
Get out of here. Have a good weekend, pal.
You too, my man. Good to chat with you again.
Eric Francis, as we start to wrap things up this hour, thanks to Shan, Cam, and Riley, our producers. My name is Pat Steinberg. Eric Francis joins us on the Eric Francis Hour every Friday here on Flames Talk. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale's on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.